As the mediums are the sources of power used by the spirit world for the production of the various phenomena, I shall, on the following pages, group the occurrences observed at the present day around mediums discussed in the publication in question. I take the facts from this journal and I append their correct interpretation at the end of each section. The medium Klusky in Warsaw, Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie, 1926, pp. 522, F. W. Polosky, professor of anatomy at the University of Michigan, USA, gives an exhaustive account of his observations of the medium Klusky in Warsaw, writing, "The phenomena I witnessed with Klusky were most extraordinary and surpassed everything I had previously read and heard of such matters. The usual preliminaries that preceded a séance with the medium Klusky consisted of a minute examination of the room in which the experiment was to be held, and of all the articles contained therein. Windows and doors were locked and sealed, and strips of wax paper bearing the participants' secret marks and signatures were pasted over them. If it was desired and when no ladies were present, the medium sat there completely naked. As soon as all the participants had taken their seats at the table and formed a chain, the medium immediately went into a deep trance. The phenomena usually made themselves evident at once. The chain was formed by hooking the little finger of each hand into those of one's neighbors. This allowed the observers to move the rest of their hand freely, as for writing, or for feeling or touching objects, without breaking contact. The séances were held either in complete darkness or by the light of a red lamp. In either case, luminous plates lay ready on the table. The plates are about 1 square foot in size and are made of light wood, with handles something like those of hand mirrors. They are painted on one face with a luminous substance. Before the séance they are exposed to magnesia, sick, light. 206. It is often unnecessary for the participants to turn off the white light in the room, for as soon as the medium begins to fall into a trance, the white light goes out of its own accord and the red light is turned on. Habitual séance attendees relate that the light's fading and coming on proceeds slowly and by stages. I did not see this myself. From personal experience and from first-hand testimony given by perfectly trustworthy observers, I can state it as a fact that the medium Klusky produces the following phenomena. A. Rappings or knocks that are very typical and at the same time quite unusual. I heard them often and noted their peculiarity at once, without having my attention called to it by anyone else. I could distinctly hear, or rather feel, that they were not produced on the surface of the table or of the wall, but within them. I mention this particularly, because I made several attempts to imitate the rappings produced by Klusky, but failed entirely to reproduce the sound of the rappings heard at Klusky séances. B. Levitations, floating of the human body in the air without support. I did not witness these personally, but heard that they often occur at Klusky séances. Not only was the table knocked over and lifted, but the medium himself as well as one or more of the participants were raised several feet above the floor. C. Klusky's specialty is the production of partial, or, more often, of completely formed apparitions or phantoms. The partial materializations are usually heads. These materializations appear almost instantly either above or behind the medium, but even more often behind or between the séance participants, who are seated at some distance from him. After a few sharp, clearly audible raps on the table or the walls, bright stars or sparks appear, rising above the table and floating upward toward the ceiling. These sparks, which have a bluish light, vary in size from that of a pea to that of a hazelnut, and often as many as a dozen appear. They all move simultaneously and at considerable speed, 3-4 feet per second, above the seats of the séance participants, flying in all directions and forming groups or by twos. Some vanish, while others descend in pairs close to the participants. Whenever they came within about 16 inches of me, I could see to my great surprise that there were pairs of human eyes that were looking at me. Within a few seconds, a perfectly formed human head developed from such a pair of eyes. It was clearly visible by the light of a materialized hand with a luminous palm. The hand was raised above the head in order to illuminate it from all sides and to show it to the observers, all the while the eyes rested steadily upon the séance participants, while the face assumed a 207 friendly, smiling expression. I saw a number of such heads, occasionally two at a time, flying like balloons from one participant to another and, when they were asked, "Please come over to me," taking the shortest route to the person making the request, often directly across the table and as swiftly as shooting stars. D. Phantoms, which were invisible, whose footsteps, however, were heard on the creaking floorboards, came and touched my face and hands and my whole body with their soft, living hands and fingers. The sensation of the touch of a living human hand was unmistakable. These invisible phantoms will, if requested to, fetch objects from all over the room in which the séance is being held, and, in spite of the darkness, never grasp the wrong object, never collide with anything and never touch a participant, not even when moving a heavy object, like a bronze bust weighing 30 pounds, or when setting down an iron kettle filled with melted paraffin weighing 12 kilograms. E. Apparitions visible by red light. These phantoms generally picked up a luminous plate and turned the dark side to the participants, illuminating themselves and going from one person to another, to give each one the opportunity of observing them close by. The light radiated by the plate was so strong that the pores and roughness of the skin of the phantom faces and hands could be distinguished. On the nose of one old man I could even see the sinuous tracing of the tiny veins. I could also distinguish the texture of the cloth in which the phantom was clothed. These apparitions came so close to me that I could hear them breathe and feel their breath against my face. But the most impressive and convincing feature of these apparitions when they came toward us were the eyes and faces, and their lively expressions. When questions were addressed to the apparitions, their facial expressions were always perfectly suited to the answer, and their lips formed an amiable smile. F. The phantoms of animals we saw were chiefly squirrels, dogs and cats. On one occasion a lion appeared and on another, a large bird, either a falcon or a buzzard. I myself saw the first two mentioned species, which behaved quite naturally, the squirrel hopping about the table, the dog running around it, wagging its tail, jumping into the laps of the participants and licking their faces. In short, he acted in every respect as any trained dog would. The lion's behavior, I was told, was more threatening. It lashed its tail, striking the furniture. The startled séance participants were unable to control this animal and put an end to the séance by awakening the medium. 208. The buzzard flew about, beating against the walls and ceiling with its wings, and when it finally perched on the medium's shoulder, a flash photograph was taken of it by a camera that had been placed in front of the medium. Among this class of phantoms is also the strange specter of a creature called Pithecanthropus by the members of the group. This apparition is frequently in evidence at Klusky seances, since it appears only in complete darkness. A closer examination of it is difficult. It has the appearance of a hairy man or of a large ape, its face being covered with hair, its forehead fairly high, and its arms long and powerful. Its behavior toward the séance participants is rough and boisterous. It tries to stroke their hands or faces, and in so doing generally breaks up the séance, or the spectators are compelled to do so, as they are unable to control it. I saw, or rather felt it only once, when it brushed against me, and I noticed a peculiar odor which I could not define at that moment, but which other participants who were more familiar than I with the phantom described as that of a wet dog. On the occasion mentioned it passed behind me, going to the lady beside me, who was holding the medium's hand. It broke the chain and put an end to the séance by grasping the lady's hand and rubbing it against its face. This startled her so, that she screamed loudly. G. Many of the apparitions have luminous hands, that is to say, the palms of their hands shine in the dark. The light given off is white, slightly tinged with green, and it is so strong that whenever the phantoms hold or pass their hands above their heads, faces or figures, every detail is shown as plainly as when luminous plates are used. They thus illuminate themselves in order to gift the participants an opportunity to observe them closely. However, they also turn their luminous hands or rather palms toward the participants, so that the latter are illuminated and, apparently, observed by the phantoms in turn. On one such occasion I could see distinctly that the light was not altogether steady, but was constantly vibrating, showing different intensities, although the light thrown off by the palm as a whole remained the same throughout. I could also see brighter sparks or rays fluctuating in zigzag or on different courses from the base of the hand to the fingertips. At the same time the luminous palms diffused a powerful smell of ozone. H. One of the rarest, but perhaps one of the highest types, is the phantom of an old man that is completely self-illuminating. I have seen it only twice. The apparition resembles a pillar of light and is, as I was told, often seen in the Klusky circle. The light emanating from it is so intense that not only all the seance participants, but all objects, near and distant, in the room, are illuminated by it. When I saw the apparition, the palms of its 209 hands and the region around its heart were more luminous than the other parts of its body. The phantom arose in the middle of the room, at some distance from us. The table around which we were seated stood in one corner of the room, with the medium sitting directly in that corner. The old man wore a high, conical headdress and was clothed in a long robe that hung down in deep folds. He approached us with majestic strides, his robe swaying as he walked. With his hands he made motions in the shape of triangles. At the same time he spoke in a deep, solemn voice. He stopped behind me for about 10 seconds, waving his luminous hands above us and speaking continually. Then he withdrew to the far end of the room and vanished. His coming was accompanied by a wave of ozone-rich air, which filled the room even after the seance had ended. The phantom is that of a very old man with a long, grey beard. His language was rather guttural, and incomprehensible to anyone present, although between us we had a command of about 12 different languages. To date no one has succeeded in identifying this language or in discovering who the phantom is. Among the members of the circle he is known as the Assyrian priest, a designation that fits his external appearance perfectly. Paraffin molds were made by the phantoms. As soon as they noticed the kettle filled with melted paraffin on the table, they would approach it with evident pleasure and, on request, would make shapes in very specific and complicated positions out of the paraffin. They dipped their hands into the paraffin and allowed the glove-like molds thus formed to drop upon the table. Whenever the phantom hand is luminous, it can be seen as it splashes about in the paraffin like a goldfish in a bowl. The glove-shaped molds were treated rather carelessly by the phantoms. On one occasion a pair of them fell from the table into my lap and from there to the floor. I called the attention of the others to this, asking them not to move their feet, lest the molds be damaged. One participant asked the phantom to pick up the molds and place them on the table, which was immediately done. In the process my ankle was firmly seized and my leg pushed aside to make room under the table where there were 14 legs. The phantom required from 30-45 seconds to make a mold, whereas when I tried to do this myself, it took several minutes for the paraffin to cool sufficiently to be removed. Even then I found it impossible to strip the glove from my hand without breaking it. In fact, I was unable to accomplish this with a single finger that I had dipped into the paraffin as far as the second joint. When I removed the paraffin from a plaster cast by dipping it into hot water, I noticed a number of hairs floating in the water. They were 210 common hairs, of the kind that grow on the back of the hand and on the third finger joint. Since I was quite sure that I had used perfectly clean water and a white porcelain bowl in conducting my test, I was greatly astonished at this discovery. I therefore examined the previously made casts and noticed, through the relatively thin layer of paraffin, several bits of hair or down embedded in the paraffin on one of them. In this connection I experienced one especially noteworthy case. In one cast the hand is doubled into a fist, the tip of the thumb projecting between the index and the middle fingers. In this particular experiment the phantom had been asked to do something complicated, peculiar and hard to imitate, but it was left at liberty to do whatever it liked. It seemed to reflect for a while as though trying to think of something especially appropriate. Then it dipped its outstretched hand into the paraffin, and only then made a fist. Before I filled this mold with plaster, I could see on the inside several irregularly shaped ribs of paraffin running through the hollow in the interior of the glove and supporting certain points. They corresponded to the curved recesses between the fingers. J. I saw only a few apports, objects produced at spiritist seances, and they were all small. I was told, however, that fairly heavy objects had been brought from distant rooms into that in which the seances are held. The most remarkable phenomenon of this sort was the disappearance of Klusky himself from the seance room, which had been locked and sealed. To their great amazement, the seance participants found him in a fairly remote room of the apartment, sleeping quietly, on a sofa. K. I observed a considerable drop in temperature in the seance room. I, as well as several other observers, felt evident chills toward the end of the one and a half or two-hour seances. The thermometers provided in the room showed a drop in temperature toward the end of the seances of from 6 to 8 degrees centigrade, 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit. This is contrary to usual experience, since the temperature of a room, and especially of the tightly closed room, in which 7 persons remain for a considerable time, 1-2 hours, generally rises, the more so as the room in question was only of moderate size, 12 by 20 feet. L. As the phantoms made their appearance, I saw something resembling luminous smoke or fog floating above the head of the medium like a small cloud. This cloud moved to one side and in a few seconds became a human head, or else it would spread out vertically and become a complete human figure, which immediately began to walk about. 211. The most astonishing and interesting part of these phenomena, so to speak their most important feature as far as I was concerned, was the absolutely human behavior of the apparitions. They acted precisely like guests at a party. As they passed around the table, they greeted the more familiar participants with a smile of recognition, whereas they studied any newcomers attentively. The inquisitive look in their eyes is hard to describe. I could see from their efforts to understand our expressions, our smiles, our questions and answers, as well as from their actions, that they were particularly anxious to convince us of the fact that they were real beings and not illusions or hallucinations. These apparitions are also not always life-size. Toward the end of a séance, when the medium has become rather exhausted, or if he felt indisposed already before the séance began, the phantoms do not appear full-size, but are smaller by a third or a half. When I saw a phantom of this kind for the first time, I thought it was a child. On closer examination, I could tell by the wrinkled face that it was an old man or woman, though below normal size. When such a shrinkage occurred, the leader of the circle would often say, "Let us help the medium." He would then beat time, while all the participants breathed deeply and evenly. The effect was remarkable, for the shrunken phantom figure would instantly begin to grow and in a few seconds regain its full size. The phantoms that appear at seances with Klusky belong to different nationalities and generally speak their native language. Nevertheless, they readily understand remarks addressed to them in any language. They seem to have the gift of reading the souls of others, for it is not necessary to utter a wish or a particular question. Merely thinking it is sufficient for it to be carried out. One need only to think that a phantom should do this or that, and it will be done or refused. In fact, phantoms occasionally refuse to do certain things, or they explain that they cannot do them, or cannot do them at this time, or they may promise to fulfill or try to fulfill the request on some future occasion. Not all apparitions are able to speak. Many prefer to make themselves understood by rapping, a very tedious and time-consuming process, since one always has to begin counting at the beginning of the alphabet. The voices are perfectly distinct and of normal strength, sounding like a loud whisper. 212. The animated expression on the phantom faces while they are speaking is very convincing. In one instance, I could plainly see the look of expectation in the face of the apparition of a Turk who bowed before me, saying, "Çok yaşlı histan." Seeing that I did not understand him, he repeated the words with a friendly smile. I still did not know what he was trying to say, but out of a feeling of admiration for his chivalrous nation I replied, "Vive la Turquie! Long live Turkey!" His pleasure at my remark was evident. He smiled with radiant eyes, folded his arms, bowed and disappeared. I wrote his words down phonetically on my notepad and on the following day had them translated by someone who knew the language, who told me that they meant, "Long live Poland." Explanation of the facts. Professor Polowski's personal experiences with the medium Klusky confirm in every respect what I had been told of the laws of spirit communication, and especially what is set down in the section of this book relating to Odic force. In all that takes place at the Klusky seances, the medium does not participate in any way as a thinking or acting personality. He is simply and solely the source of power from which the spirits that appear secure the odd necessary for the manifestations. If the medium is unable to supply enough odd, either because he is physically ill or because he is weakened from having already provided so much odd, the phenomena take place either imperfectly or not at all. Professor Polowski saw the odd as luminous smoke or cloud, or as sparks and tiny flames. Within these he saw pairs of eyes, and later, entire faces, that grew into complete figures in proportion to the increase of odic force. It is the same thing that we find in the Bible in connection with the burning bush, the pillars of cloud and fire of the Israelites, the cloud above the tabernacle, the cloud on Mount Tabor, and the small odic flames seen at Pentecost. All of these occur in the Bible in connection with communication with the spirit world, as has been described in detail in the preceding chapters. When the report quoted above mentions the growth of the small materialized spirits to normal size as soon as the participants at the seance began to breathe deeply and evenly, in measured time, this will, after what has been said, be understood at once. Not only the medium provides odd to the spirit world, but also the others present, some more, some less, especially when they have been attending such seances regularly. They are, so to speak, assistant mediums to the chief medium. It is a fact, furthermore, that the liberation of odd by the participants is greatly increased by deepened. 213. Even breathing, hence, the art of breathing plays so important a role in the mediumistic exhibitions given by fake ears. The temperature drop toward the end of the seances instead of a temperature rise as might be expected is also due to natural causes. As was stated in the chapter devoted to odd, it is only in its condensed form that odd is perceptible to the human senses and usable by the spirits for working on matter. It was further explained that the condensation of odd is effected by means of cold power currents, according to the universally applicable law that cold condenses. Such cold currents must be applied in extra strength toward the end of a seance, because the warmth radiated by the persons present has an adverse effect on the condensation of the odd. These cold currents cause a drop in temperature. Professor Polowski is astonished at the human behavior of the materialized spirits, into whose eyes and faces he could look, whose figures he could feel, and whose breathing, heartbeats and voices he could hear. If, however, we bear in mind that these spirits are the same personalities they were as mortals, that as spirits they possess the same organs we do, with the sole difference being that theirs are spiritual whereas ours are corporeal, we can readily understand that the heart of a materialized spirit beats audibly and that we can hear the breathing of the materialized lungs of the spirit beings, which function precisely like ours. By the same token, the various individual limbs that appear are simply materializations of the respective spirit limbs. The hands that were dipped into the paraffin until viscoled were the materialized hands of a spirit, and they had the same distinctive features that they had when that spirit lived in its earthly body. Hence, the thumbprint and fingerprints of a materialized spirit hand are exactly the same as those it had in human form. Furthermore, we find evident also all of the other peculiarities the spirit had when alive on earth when, as a spirit, it materializes using the condensed odd of a medium. That is the reason why also the hairs on its hands and fingers can be seen, if the spirit, as a human being, had hairs there. Consequently, it is quite natural that some of these hairs should have been found in the paraffin after it had cooled, For if a person whose hands are at all hairy dips them into hot paraffin, some of the hairs will fall out and remain in the paraffin. At this point it becomes necessary to insert a very important observation. The physical peculiarities that spirits had as human beings are retained by them in the beyond only as long as they remain at the low spiritual level they occupied as mortals. If, however, they progress in the beyond, their spirit forms become more beautiful and noble, and the defects, 214, and blemishes of their human shapes disappear. Nevertheless, even spirits that have acquired a different and more beautiful form due to their advancement in the beyond are accustomed, when materializing at spiritistic seances, to appear as they looked in their human form, which they recreate for this purpose. They do this only if they have friends or relatives present at the seance and desire to be recognized by them. It is their way of establishing their identity, by showing themselves as the individuals they were as human beings. The paraffin molds of which Professor Polowski speaks could be made by the spirits only by dipping their materialized hands into the liquid paraffin and then partially or completely dematerializing or dissolving them after the paraffin had cooled. Partial dematerialization of the spirit hand, that is to say, a decrease in the thickness and a slight shortening of the fingers, was sufficient to withdraw the hand without injuring the molds. A hand-shaped mold could also be produced if, at the moment of immersion, the materialization had the consistency only of a dense mist. The odic form of a spirit having this degree of condensation is even able to pass through solid matter. Therefore, a spirit hand of a mist-like consistency can be withdrawn from the paraffin mold and leave this behind even without being dematerialized. In this case, the observer cannot perceive any change in the materialized spirit hand. A spirit, therefore, has three ways in which it can make and strip off these molds. A. It may materialize its hand solidly and dissolve it again completely afterwards. B. It may dissolve the solid materialization only partially, reducing its thickness and length to the extent required. Or C. It may condense the odd only to the consistency of a heavy fog, in which case it can without changing the hand both make the paraffin molds and take them off without damaging them. In this last case, the spirit hand moves out through the cooled paraffin without encountering resistance, grasps the form from the outside and lays it on the table. When Professor Polowski says that the spirits treated the molds rather carelessly and in one instance let them drop on the floor, while in other respects he commends their friendly and obliging manner, he shows that he is unfamiliar with a very important point. He seems not to know that the spirit cannot keep its hand materialized as long as it pleases. Such materialization depends entirely on the odd at the spirit's disposal and on the degree of condensation of that odd. But, as we know, heat dissolves odd. Consequently, the hot or very warm paraffin very quickly weakens the materialization of the immersed spirit hand, and the degree of condensation is often no longer sufficient, when the paraffin molds are removed, to allow 215. The spirit to lay the mold down carefully. The molds are dropped, not from carelessness on the part of the spirits, but from insufficient odic power and condensation. We can readily understand that not only the spirits of human beings but also the spirits of animals materialize, if we know that when an animal dies, its spirit leaves the physical body in the same manner as a human spirit. The only difference between the spirits of animals and those of humans is in the degree of development, not in the nature of the spirit itself. Animals are the incarnation of low spirits, while human beings embody spirits that have already made more progress upward. The fact that animal spirits were materialized at Klusky's seances shows that the meetings of this circle were dominated by the low spirit world, even if now and then better spirits, like that of the Assyrian priest, made an appearance there. These are as a rule the medium's guardian spirits, which endeavor to mitigate the influences of evil, as far as this lies within their power. They cannot, however, accomplish much in that direction unless the medium and the observers of their own accord seek connection with what is good and lofty only, and reject everything low and mean. The greatest harm from the connection with the low spirit world is to the medium himself, and not just spiritually but physically as well. In the teachings I received, it was pointed out that the odic force taken from the medium by the evil ones is not restored. Hence, as Professor Polowski says, the medium Klusky is completely exhausted after every seance, and often has to be put to bed before he recovers consciousness, which sometimes isn't until several hours later.